Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the session. So I'm really, really impressed there's so many people here, because I expected probably two or three people in the audience, because right now it's the Mark Manassi and Mark Racinovich show. And they've been strengthening the stage all night long to support both egos. So I'm really pleased you're here at this session. I've been thinking about presenting at TechEd, and I've actually now been presenting at Microsoft events since about 1998. And because this is the very, very last TechEd in Europe, maybe, it's not 100%, but maybe it's the last TechEd event, maybe it'll be Ignite next year, who knows? I thought, you know, a group of people we always forget to thank are the people that make sure that that screen is projected beautifully and clearly. The way the sound comes out, the way you manage to come and sit in the room and get in the room, and all of that sort of organization is always forgotten about. And I'd really just like to show a huge round of applause and appreciation to those people, and particularly our room manager today, who is Sam Craig. So can we just thank them? Thank you very much for doing that, because I think they are a neglected species. And the other thing, of course, I really like that, because next door they're wondering what's going on. And the people who've come to the session are thinking, God, it can't have finished already, can it? And the speakers are thinking, how do you get a round of applause right at the beginning? And it wasn't a myth for me, of course. It was for all those people that make things silently happen in the background. Advanced troubleshooting. ADFS, the web application proxy. How exciting is that? So, it is an advanced session. How many of you are using ADFS today? Okay, that's good. How many of you actually read the outline? Oh. So you should have seen, if you'd read the outline, that it did say that knowledge of ADFS would be a good idea before coming on this session. So if you're brand new to ADFS, you may find the session a little bit difficult. And if you feel that, you know, we are going to get deep, we're going to get technical in this session, and I won't be upset if you suddenly think, oh, maybe I'm in the wrong session. So let's get started, and what I want to do is make sure everyone is talking in the same way. So I want to do some key concepts to begin with as an introduction. I then want to look at certificates and trust, all right? One of the things is ADFS doesn't work. It could well be a broken trust, and we need to understand that. I want to look at SSL bindings, because SSL bindings have changed in this particular release of ADFS, and by the way, you'll see various blogs on the internet saying ADFS 3, right? It is not ADFS 3, it is ADFS, and that's official from the product group. And if you're confused by that, it is ADFS running on server 2012 R2, all right? So don't think of it as ADFS 3, because you might think the next release will be ADFS 4. But so I just wanted to clarify that. The other thing I want to do is get in some really advanced troubleshooting using Fiddler. How many of you use Fiddler? Okay, that's probably slightly less than half the audience. And this is my favorite tool for really finding out what's going on with Federation. I'm not saying it has to be your favorite tool. There are other tools, but we'll really get in using Fiddler to see what's going on. And then I'm going to look at using security auditing, and then I'm going to look at looking at some scenarios with the web application proxy. But all the way through, all my troubleshooting techniques, all of the stuff dealing with certificates, doesn't matter whether we're talking about the ADFS proxy or we're talking about ADFS itself. The same techniques apply. So a warning, just remember that you don't just take stuff away from here and put it straight into production and try it out. And remember, most of this stuff and content that I produce is based on field experience. And remember, all fields are different. So you get those fields with nice, young, you know, spring lambs in them. You get those fields with maybe horses in. And then you get those fields full of cow poo. and we need to apply different techniques for each one. So, but what I'm going to show you will help you on your way. Demo environment, I do demo environments. I'm not building a production, so don't take it away and say, oh, this is the way John built an ADFS environment. Yes, for my demo environment, but not for your production. So, some key concepts. We have our user, our subject, our principal, and that user wants to gain access to application X, which is down the bottom. And what? How does it work? So, our user will go to the security token service. I'm going to leave it. It doesn't have to be Microsoft. There are other security token servers out there. And a security token server can authenticate that user or refer the user to another security token service to do the authentication. If it was ADFS today, it would need to authenticate the user against the Active Directory. Right? But one of the really exciting things that's coming along in the next wave is the fact that we can authenticate now against any LDAP v3 compliant directory. So LDAP's back in the scene with ADFS. So we're going to authenticate that user, and we're going to produce a token for consumption by the relying party. So that immediately tells us the relying party has to be known about on the security token server. So it has to know because it's going to craft a token just for that relying party. The token is digitally signed, and the relying party will accept the token, provided it validates the signature, and it will accept the token as the fact that the user has been authenticated. What's on the token? Pretty much anything you like, or practically nothing. It could just be the guy's authenticated, all right? And then it's up to the application to find out who that person actually is. And hopefully we got some unique identifier for the user. We may not even have a name, though. So what goes on the token is, you know, down to your design. Now, it's all about trust. And it's all about trust between parties. So the first point of trust is our user needs to trust that they're talking to the security token service. And on this slide, I'm showing a security token service. It could be the proxy. It could be the security token service itself. So we're talking in the Microsoft world, it'd be the web application proxy, or it would be the ADFS server. And we also need to trust that we're talking to the relying party. So how's that done? Well, it's done with standard SSL certificates, which will also allow us to start up and open up an encrypted channel as well. So what type of certificates should those be? We could, if we wanted to, use self-sign. Problem is, it'd be a nightmare, because we then have to distribute those self-signs to all the clients. So that's an absolute no. So what about using your own CA? That's fine, and we can distribute the root certificate to the client machines automatically. But if in that certificate that we actually have on the server, we have a CRL distribution point, that client must be able to get to the CRL distribution list from the distribution point. So we'd have to set up the fact that that CRL distribution point was available to the client if it's inside the corporate network, and it's available to the client if it's outside the corporate network. And then the question comes is, well, actually, do you know what? We're doing federation. We're probably going to bring third parties in on this at some point. So the best way, really, is to use publicly issued certificates. And then we don't have to worry about publishing the CRL list and so on. The next point is we have our security token, which is digitally signed. It's digitally signed by the ADFS server. So the ADFS server is going to have a private key to sign that. And the relying party will need the public key in order to validate the certificate. And I always say, use best practice here is to use self-sign. And somebody always complains about that and says, it's not secure. All right? Let's just think about this for a minute. Let's go back to an SSL cert. SSL cert, we put on a web server. right? We've got clients all over the place. We don't know who they are, all right? They're going to come up to that server, and on that server, let's say it's, I don't know, it's www.xyz.com. They come up to the server. Do they accept that certificate? They need some way of validating that that certificate's been issued properly. So they'll chain the certificate to root, and provided it's a root certificate that they trust, they'll say, okay, that's good. Now, imagine the situation where someone steals that certificate off that web server and puts it on another web server. Client comes up, chains it to root, it's a good certificate, right? But, of course, it's a bogus server. So what we need is a way of revoking that. Well, we can't tell all the clients, because we don't know who they are, the certificate's revoked. All right, so what we do is we publish a certificate revocation list. All right, so this client can now check to root, check the certificate revocation list. Now let's go in and look at the certificate that's actually used in for signing. Who's the trusted root? It's the ADFS server. It's the one that's going to do the signing. We're establishing a trust relationship between the relying party and the ADFS server. All right? We specifically tell the relying party about this certificate. So we've got a certificate that's been signed up here, and we're telling the relying party, this is the certificate to use. All right? It doesn't need to check it to root. It has been specifically told to use this certificate. It's a one-to-one relationship rather than a one-to-many. All right? That client will only say, I have a valid signature, provided the correct certificate's being used. So the client needs to have the thumbprint for the certificate that's being used for signing. How do you revoke it? You just kill the top certificate. The client says, that's not the right certificate, and will refuse to validate the signature. Right? So we don't need CRL distribution points either. Right? So the advantage of using self-signing is they automatically roll over when you want them to. Some people say, oh, it's a real pain when things roll over. Well, you need to know how to deal with the rollover, so you need to know how to notify the relying parties if they can't accept automatic rollover. The other thing is we've got, not only do we roll over automatically, we actually log details in the event logs, so we know when they're going to roll over. So recommendation is to use self-sign because we've got a one-to-one relationship and both sides know about each other. And then we've got the encryption certificate. So to do the encryption, we need the public key up on the ADFS server and we need the private key down on the relying party. So to get this working, we're going to have to exchange information between the relying party and the STS. So there's lots of points where things can go wrong, and if the trust is broken, it's almost invariably a certificate problem. The other thing, if you do end up issuing your own certificates through your own certificate authority, you just say, I don't want to use the self-sign with automatic rollover, you'll need to turn the rollover off, plus be careful, CNG certificates are not supported. So if you put a CNG certificate in, you'll find it doesn't work, and it's not very clear why it doesn't work. So we need to exchange information between the two parties. So the relying party has an endpoint that we'll go to. It needs the relying party certificate to decrypt tokens, so it will need the private key there. And over on the IP, we've got information about the IP's endpoint, the certificate for signing, and we swap that information. And what will happen is when we swap the information from the security token service, i.e. ADFS, it's going to end up in our web config file on our web server. So having done that swap, everyone is tied together. Now, the WAP. The WAP needs to talk to the ADFS server. So this is the web application proxy. There is no separate ADFS proxy anymore. It is the web application proxy that we use as the ADFS proxy as well. And somehow the ADFS server needs to trust the WAP. So how's it done? What does it use? And call it out. It uses a certificate. Yes, absolutely right. So what sort of certificate is it? It's a self-signed cert. Where does that self-signed cert come from? It comes at the point of doing the install of the WAP. A self-signed certificate is automatically generated. It's ADFS proxy trust-proxy. So that's who it's issued to. And what happens is that certificate gets written into the ADFS configuration database. That's why when you do the install of the WAP, you need to supply credentials for the ADFS server. So this little screen here is the web application proxy config wizard, and we're supplying credentials so that we can write it into that configuration database. It will then get taken from that configuration database, and it will be put into the store in the ADFS trusted devices. And that allows a CTL, or a certificate trust list, to be generated. So when the client comes on, it says, oh, you need to do client cert. And the client says, yeah, but which certificate do I need to send you? And that's done by sending across the certificate trust list. So the client selects the correct certificate and passes it back to the ADFS server. Right? That all works beautifully, right? And when the certificate expires, it issues another one. Well, before it expires, writes it into the database, it gets put up into the appropriate location in the store. Right? If you have the two things turned off for a while, right? So if you turn your proxy off, the certificate expires, the best way of getting around that is to use update web application proxy, the registration service. So you update the registration service and it will put a new certificate across. So lots of places where certificates get broken. Question here.
What's the grace period when they're overlapping?
What's the grace period on the overlap with the proxy? I don't know the answer to that. It is a few days, but I'm not sure how many. The SSL certificate binding. This is another thing that you need to be very careful about. So traditionally, SSL certs were bound IP address, port number. Right? So we have something on, you know, a particular IP address, 443. And if you wanted to put another certificate on 443, you had to have another IP address, and so on and so on. So we have multiple IP addresses to support multiple certificates. So now we can use what's called server name identification. And instead of binding to an IP port number, you actually bind to a host name port number. And ADFS and the ADFS proxy both use that. Right? ADFS and the web application proxy, they don't use IIS. So what they're using is HTTP SIS. So if you want to see the certificate binding or you want to change it, you need to use NetSH to do that. So we use NetSH HTTP show SSL cert to see the certificates that are actually bound. The problem is you may come across a non-SNI client, all right? And if you do, things will not work. And the first time I came across this was when a client of mine phoned me up and said, I've got a problem. We've got ADFS all working. Fantastic. Works with Windows 7. It works with Windows 8, 8.1. We've tried some of our old XP clients. And I said, oh, you haven't still got them, have you? And, you know, a bit of mumbling. And yes, they had. All right. And they were paying, actually, for the support. And they said it doesn't work. And I looked into it for them, and I discovered that XP does not do SNI. Right? So it failed. Hardware load balancing. Right? A few weeks after the problem with the XP, which took me a little bit of time to fix, I got a call about how hardware load balancer not working. And I then discovered that it was exactly the same thing. But it was very nice because I knew very quickly what the problem, probably the problem was. Now, your best thing to do is to enable SNI compatibility if you can. So you can do it on your load balancer. You may be able to do it on your health probes, etc. But if you have to support a non-SNA client, what you can do is you can bind the certificate, the 0000:443. But the certificate that you bind will need to have all of the namespaces that you are supporting. And what will happen is it will basically go down, is there an SNI in there, server name identifier? No. So what it will do, it says, do I have any certificates bound to an IP address on 443? Yes, it does, and it serves that cert back. So what I want to do is show you in a second how we actually figure out very quickly whether we've got a non-SNA client, SNI client. The other question that comes up all the time is about SSL bridging. Right? This is where we terminate the SSL session on some network appliance. If you terminate the SSL session prior to your WAP, right, it will all work, except you won't be able to use workplace join, and you will not be able to do client certificate authentication. Because workplace join is passing a certificate, client certificate authentication is doing the same. So it will break those. Can you put it between the WAP and the ADFS farm components? And the answer to that is absolutely not. You can put a hardware load balancer, but you cannot do SSL termination. Because if you do, you will break the certificate authentication between the WAP and the ADFS server. And finally, WAP and the publish server. So you've got WAP and you've got a publish server down here. Can you do it? And the answer is absolutely yes. It shouldn't cause any problems at all. All right? So that's just something to bear in mind. Okay, this is my demo environment. I have my example.com network, I have a partner network, a couple of client machines, and I've got a sort of pretend network internet with an ISP providing me my DNS and my IP addresses, my DHCP. So what I want to do is a quick demo of looking at the SSL certificate binding, and I'm going to start off on, I'm starting off on my client machine. And I'm going to go and access my claims application. And that all looks good. So I'm going to log in as a user here. So example and is John. And yeah, we get all our claims back. So that's all working beautifully. So having got all our ADFS working, we'll then go and actually try a non-SNA client. And I've got one here, which is my XP box. So let's just go across to the XP box, go to my claims app, and it fails. So it's failing, apparently it looks like it's failing going to srv1.example.com. So we don't really know what's going on. So what I want to do is actually go across to my ADFS server. So we just find the ADFS server. And I'm going to actually put on a network monitor here. And I'm going to start a capture. And I'm going to go back to my client that's failing and go to claims again on here. So let's have a look. Let's stop the capture and put in SSL in here. Apply that. And what we can see is a client hello. This is the beginning of the exchange that takes place. Let me just clear the filter now. And what's actually happening is there's my client hello, and the next thing that's happening is I'm getting a TCP/IP reset. So there's my client going to the ADFS server and then going from the ADFS server back to the client, and we've got a TCP reset. Right? And what's actually happening is the server, because if we look at this, in the client hello, there is no server identification. So what the server's basically doing, it's saying there is no extension for server identification. So what it's saying is, look, I don't have a certificate for you, so I'm going to reset this, right? Because if the server only has binding based on host and IP, host and port number. So just to contrast that, let's start this again. And so I'm going to start this going again. And let's just go to my client machine. Let's just close that off and just go shoot over to claims on here. And let's just go back and see what we've got here. So we've got, let's stop it and put SSL in there again. Apply that as a filter. Notice the client hello, server hello. So we're building the SSL channel. And if we look down here, what we'll see down the bottom here is, in fact, we've got a whole bunch of extensions, and down here is the server name, and this is the server name is down there. The server name identification extension is showing, and the server we're sort of passing, this is the server we're trying to talk to. So this time what's happening, it's being received, and it says, oh, you need a certificate for 443 for adfs.example.com. Here you are. All right, so that's the server reply at that point. So if I do need to support this device, what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to actually update. So let's just go across here. I'm going to have to update my bindings. So if I do a net SH on here, first of all, and it's HTTP, and it's show SSL cert. And what we can see is, if we look down here, we've got host name port, ADFS on 443, host name port, host name port. There is nothing about IP addresses in there. And I actually, just to save me doing any typing, on my desktop, I have, let me just grab this and then we'll talk about it. So just pop that back over here. And, I just clicked twice, it added it twice. So it's NetSH, adds SSL cert, I'm gonna add it, so I'm doing a wildcard binding for the IP, 443, I need to supply the certificate hash, which is here, and the application ID, which is here. And now, if we go back to our XP client, then we can go to claims, and we're being prompted, so we can, that was I was going up to my other server. I need to go to example. And why it failed is I went to my other Federation server, which is actually owned by my partner, and of course the SSL connection failed because I hadn't updated that one. So the recommendation is not to support non-SNI clients, but if you do have to, that's the way around it. But what I wanted to do is, in particular, is show you how you can see you've got a non-SNI client. So if it says server, if it says the client says hello, and the next thing that happens is you get a reset, that's the indicator, right? And that's what you you can immediately say. Well, it's probably the answer is non-SNI compliant. And then if you just check a little bit further, you can actually look to see if it's showing, it's sending across a server name. Okay, so what I want to do is recognize Federation on the wire. So here, our user hits our Federation server and could be the proxy, right? So think about that as not the proxy here, but the proxy in the editor. So we hit the claims aware application. It says you're not authenticated. We get a redirect, which sends you up to the STS that application trusts. Right? So at this point, we can authenticate the user, and we can generate a security token for the user, which then gets sent back to the claims aware application. And then what will happen is the claims aware application will take the token and it will convert it to cookies and render the page back and send you back some cookies as well, which then allows you to authenticate using those cookies. What I want to do is have a look at that little piece there. So the first redirect to the STS, what it does is it redirects to the ADFS endpoint. It's saying, what I want you to do is sign in. So we're actually signing in at that point. And then it says a realm identifier. So what we've done is we've hit this server down here. It's sent you up to the ADFS server that it trusts. And then we have a realm identifier that identifies this relying party. So the ADFS server can log the person on and find the appropriate claims, etc., for this particular relying party. So we're identifying the relying party there. WCTX remains unchanged between the request and the return. And what it does, it allows the requestor, which is our relying party, to tie up the requests, right, or the redirects, with the returning token. Because you imagine I'm being hit by 40 clients all at the same time. What we're doing is redirecting, and then the answers will start coming back, and we need a way of tying it up. So WCTX does that for us. And then we've got a timestamp, which may or may not be there. So we get back from there a web page. So from our ADFS server, we get back a web page. On that web page is a hidden form with a post method. Where does it post it to? It posts it back to the server, to the relying party. All right, so when we act submit this form, it will go back to the relying party. And sitting on that form, or sitting in that form rather, is a SAML token. And the SAML token contains all our claims, all right, the identity of the user, it's signed, so it's got the signature in there, and it's also got the public key of the signing certificate. All right, so we know what the public key is. And then WCTX, which remains unchanged, as we said, we've got the submit button, and then we've got a little bit of JavaScript that automates the submit. And as I say, that remains unchanged since we send the request up or the redirect and we get the reply. ADFS cookies, there's a lot of cookies we get. Number one is, the first one is this thing called Home Realm Discovery. If we've got this server trusting a number of different other realms, what we'll do is Home Realm Discovery. So you remember when I just had on that, when we went with XP and we had XT seminars and Example Federation, and I clicked on the wrong one by mistake, that was when I was saying which my home realm was, okay? So that is held in a persistent cookie, right? So next time we go back, we won't be asked for our home realm. We've then got this thing called MSIS Authenticated, which means we've been authenticated by the ADFS server, which means if we go back again, we don't have to go through the authentication process. We just pass that cookie back. Then you've got MSIS Authenticated, which is the time when the authentication took place. The next one is the MSIS Sign Out. Why do we need this? Relying party number one. We hit relying party number one, we get a redirect up to the ADFS server, and we authenticate, because we haven't been there before, okay? We come back to relying party number one. That cookie says that we've just issued a token for relying party number one, right? Hit relying party number two, all right? Up to the ADFS server. This time we send all the cookies across, as in the MSIS authenticated cookie. So we don't have to authenticate again. It's done automatically because we're sending the cookies. And what will happen is, because the first time we hit relying party one, we're hitting relying party number two now, and what will happen is MSIS sign out will be updated to say you've now logged in to relying party one and relying party two. Hit another one, relying party three, relying party four. They all get chained in there. And what it does is it allows us to do a federated sign out. so we can actually know which relying parties we've gone to, and therefore we can sign out from every single relying party if that's what we want to implement. So it's for implementing federated sign out. Last one is this MSIS loop detection cookie, and it stops us going round in circles or loops. So imagine the situation, you hit relying party one up to ADFS, ADFS issues a token, and for some reason, relying party one doesn't like the token, all right? So what relying party one will say is, you're not authenticated, go get a token, up. And we get a token, and we come back down again, doesn't like the token, up. And we just sit there bouncing forever, or would do, if we didn't have this MSIS loop detection. And basically it times out on 6 requests in a very rapid space of time. It says, you know, enough's enough, you've bounced up and down enough, and it will actually stop at that point. And then we've got web application cookies. So when we hit that web application, we are going to pass the token across to it, and what the web application will do is it will convert the token into cookies, right? And we can do it in one of two ways. We can either convert it and serialize it and give you back a number of cookies, so we can take the token, serialize it into a number of cookies, or we could pass you back a reference and cache the token on the server itself. An essential tool is Fiddler. We can see all the HTTP traffic, HTTPS traffic, and what Fiddler will do is actually sit as a man in the middle. All right, so we've got the browser, talks to WinINet. WinINet normally talks directly to the web server. Fiddler sits in there. And if we want to decrypt HTTPS traffic, what Fiddler will do is produce a spoof certificate. The challenge is that what can happen is we use what's called channel binding token, which means that we establish an SSL channel, right? Let's just take Fiddler out of the picture for the moment. We go from the client to the server with an SSL channel. And when we authenticate to that server, we actually bind the authentication data to the SSL channel, right? So the point of injecting the user credentials, it gets bound to the channel. When it arrives at the other end, we get the user credentials out, which will allow us to log on, but we check that the binding's correct, all right? Man in the middle, inject the credentials, Fiddler decrypts the SSL, puts the stuff stuck back in the thing. The binding doesn't happen there, the binding happened over there, so it arrives, and it actually arrives in the wrong SSL channel, all right? ADFS now implements CBT, as in channel binding token, and if you want to do some testing, you need to turn off this extended protection token check on your ADFS server. So it's where the authentication data is bound to the channel. Do remember, if you turn it off, to turn it back on after you've done your testing. The other thing is, if you want, Fiddler is very clever. It will, you know, because you're on this client machine, you give the credentials, it can actually take the credentials and inject them on the other side of itself. So in that way, you wouldn't have to change it on the server, right? But it's actually injecting the credentials in, so you get the binding and the piece between Fiddler and the endpoint. If you want to do that, there's a reference in there for that. There's a nice Fiddler inspector you can bring down for looking at the SAML token, so we can see that. And then if you were working with a partner, we browse, we get redirected up to the STS, and the STS then does this thing called home realm discovery, right? It says, I trust a number of parties, right? And there are various ways we can automate home realm discovery or try and make home realm discovery easier, but in, you know, out of the box, it just shows you the different realms that the security token service trusts. We then redirect to the partner. If we've chosen the partner does the authentication. The partner returns a security token. That security token is only consumable by your security token service, Right? The partner knows nothing about the application. So what happens here, it has to be sent back to your ADFS service, process the token, and then what happens is, oh, that arrow's round the wrong way. We return the new STS, so just imagine it's going back against the flow. So we need to swap the arrow around. So we return the STS, and then we send that token to the Claimsware app. And I do apologize, those two arrows are round the wrong way. Okay, close collaboration, really, really important. So, you know, the SSL certificates, we've got to get right. Token signing, token encryption certificates. Claims sent, claims expected. So this is particularly when you're working with a partner, what claims are they sending you? Are those the claims you actually want? Signature algorithms. I've come across this one a number of times when working with third parties where they've got their own STS service and they're using the wrong signature algorithm. It used to be troublesome to troubleshoot, but actually it's a lot easier now. This is the other one that I've been bitten with, which is it's the sort of canonicalization method is how, if you like, in simplest terms, how the XML is parsed, right? And ADFS uses the exclusive canonical XML method, right? And basically both ends need to do this, otherwise they're not going to understand the XML. So you cannot change what ADFS uses, so you have to make sure that the other party is sending you the right format using the right method. Okay, so I'm going to look at working with partners. I'm going to just do one very quick thing here, which I don't want to show you. I will, because I'm just breaking something. Right, let's switch back now to machine. And what I'm going to do is switch over. And I've got my client currently sitting here, and just going to log on. And what I'm going to do is just clear the cookies. So we've got the cookies cleared at that point. And I'm going to start off, I'm going to use Fiddler. So we're getting Fiddler running on this particular box. And I'm going to go across to my claims application. Notice the home realm discovery, okay? So I'm going to log in as a guy from the example forest, and he's going to be this guy. We're going to use John. And, oh, we got an error. Okay, so where does this error seem to be coming from? SRV1.example.com, it seems to be where it's coming from. Let's have a look with Fiddler. So what's happening is we're hitting SRV1, and the first thing that's happening is it's basically saying, you're not authenticated, but, you know, I'm going to redirect you. So if we look at the headers here, I'm going to redirect you, which is a 302, to here. So I'm going to send that to the text wizard, just going to grab that. I'm going to open a copy of Notepad, and I'm going to drop that in so we can all see it. Okay, so here, we're going to, that's very much as per the slides, right? So we're being redirected up to the ADFS server. We're identifying the realm, which is server1.example.com, and the action is WA equals sign in, so we're asking it to sign in. So let's carry on here, and let's go. So we are then going up to the ADFS server, and if we look over here at the web view on that, there's the home realm discovery. The next thing is we go back to the web server, we're doing a post. What are we posting? We look on there, we're posting the fact that our home realm, so home realm selection is adfs.example.com, ADFS. We then come through here, and this little green thing is we can't actually interpret this because it's actually encoded or encrypted, but there's our login, and we come to this point here, And notice we've got script disabled, so scripting is actually disabled here, but there's a submit button. It's a, if we go back to header, it's a 200 OK, and it's set this raft of cookies in here. So all those cookies I talked about, so we've been authenticated by the ADFS server. And if we look at this lot, what the page is in text view, and view that in Notepad, what you can see is that it's a hidden form. The action is to post back, so we're posting there to that location. Right? And if we look further down here, I'm just going to do this. I'm going to find John. We can find John. And what is John? John at example.com, that's the implicit UPN. If we do a find next on there, we've then got the attribute name is UPN. Find next. So we're actually looking at the contents of the token. Now, an easier way of doing that probably is to use the Federation Inspector, which is the one I showed you on the slides. You've got the download link on the slides. And we can see the content of the token that's coming back and all the claims. So next thing is we hit from there. So this is coming back to here with a post. Where do we post it? We're posting it here. So this is the point where we were posting it. We're posting it to the server, and what's happening? 500 internal server error. Okay, let's just go back and look at the error, and it's X509. So what are we using the certificate for? We've just got the token from the ADFS server. What's the certificate being used for? What are we going to check? If I did this, what would I be doing? It would be sort of sign language. So what certificate is it? It's the signing certificate, yes. So we're looking, it's the signing certificate's involved. So are we using the correct signing certificate? Well, what I can do is I can actually, if I go into the Federation in here, what I can go down, if I go down the bottom here, I can see the certificate, which has also got the public key in it. So I'm just going to grab that. I'm going to open a new copy of Notepad, and I'm going to pop that in there. I'm just going to get rid of the junk at the front end. So delete that out, and we'll get rid of the junk at the back end. So delete that. And then I can save that. I'm going to do a save as. I'm going to put it on my desktop, and I'm going to save it as a cert.cer. And if we look at the desktop on here, what we should see is the certificate, which it is. Oh, look, it's an ADFS signing certificate. Right. So why isn't the client accepting it? Well, what we've got to realize is the client says, I will only accept a certificate with the right thumbprint. So let's look at the thumbprint on there. And let's just pop that in there to make life easy. There's the thumbprint. All right. So what is the client actually expecting? Well, if we go across to the client, so SRV1 here, this is the relying party in this particular case. What's it expecting? If I drill into my web config on here, I can come into inetpub's claims web config, and down here somewhere, we will find the thumbprint of the certificate it's expecting. Okay, so if we go back over to here, pop that in. So that's the thumbprint of the certificate the relying party is expecting. So it is never going to accept the signature which has been signed by cert with a thumbprint that's completely different. Right? So what could have happened? Well, the certificate could have rolled over, right? Or this whole thing could be a spoof and an attack. So I could just take that thumbprint, the correct one, or is it the correct one? What I need to do is actually go to the ADFS server, and if we switch over to the ADFS server over here, And where is the ADFS server? ADFSP? Oh, is it not there? Let's just go get it. And what I can do here is I need I need PowerShell to do it. So I'm just going to open a new one, because the other one, if you remember, was a CMD prompt. And I'm going to do on here, I'm going to do a get ADFS. And what I'm looking for is certificate. And the certificate type is the signing certificate, token signing. And look, there is the correct thumbprint. So I've actually got the correct thumbprint in there. Just grab that. And I'm going to go back to my server over here, server one, and I'm going to correct that. So this could have been because the certificate had rolled over and I hadn't looked at it and done it in time. So we save that, do a file save on there. And I'm going to go back to my client now, and let's have another go. So we just close that off. And I'm just going to go into Fiddler, Control X that, and back to my client. And off we go to claims again. So this is, notice we've got the home realm discovery in that persistent cookie, so we're not being asked for it. And it's worked this time. All right, so it was a certificate failure that caused the problem. Now, if we look here, what we can see is we've gone server one up to ADFS, we've come back from ADFS, we've posted the token, and what's happened is we've got the FedAuth cookies to now say we're authenticated, and then we go back to the server with the FedAuth cookies, and we get a 200 OK. And then if we look at that with web view, we can actually see that we're getting the web page back. So that's done. OK, let's clear out Fiddler again, and let's go across to on here. Let's clear the cookies. And let's start again. And where I'm going now, this time, so I'm going claims, I'm going across to my partner organization. I'm going to log in as Tina. And we log in here as Tina. And, oh, we've got another error. All right, and what it's doing, it's giving me this correlation ID. So the first thing is to figure out, we've actually gone across to another STS. So is it the other STS that's failing, or is it our STS? Well, we can see here, adfs.example.com, so it's our STS, and we've got the name here to identify it. So it is our STS. So what we need to do is go across to our ADFS server, and we need to actually use the event log here. And if we use the event log, we can go into the application service log, ADFS, and we get a little red eye. And this is a nice new feature that we can actually see this information, because we've actually had problems with this with a number of when we've been establishing a relationship with third-party security token services. And what it's actually saying, the token issued by the partner is signed with the wrong algorithm, well, an algorithm of SHA-1, and we expected SHA-256. So you need to decide whether you're going to switch down to SHA-1 or whether you're going to tell the partner to go up to SHA-256. So let's get the partner to go up to SHA-256. So we need to go across to our partner's ADF server, and we can come in here and go in the advanced settings and switch it up. So now, this is the signature algorithm, so it's not the actual token, but it's the actual algorithm that's being used. So, and now if we go back over here, what we should find is this guy works, so let's just clean that out. And let's go back to claims. This time, we're going to go up to our partner. And that's working. Okay. So if we look down here, one of the things we find missing, all right, is we're actually not getting an email address. And we do expect an email address from the partner. Well, let's see what's going on over here. So we go up to server one. It bounces us to ADFS. We do the home realm discovery. And then we're bounced up to the partner. The partner does the authentication. The partner returns a token. Notice the hidden form on here. So if we look at this, if we look at that in text view, and what we can see is if we do a find in there, and we're looking in here for Tina, it doesn't seem to be there. So if we look down here, oh, there it is. There's Tina's email address. What you're going to realize is that by default, ADFS will encrypt the token between two ADFS servers. And that quite often happens between a third-party security token service and you. So what we could do is we could turn off encryption for debugging purposes, but that's not a great idea necessarily, and you may have real problems. It used to be the only way to solve this easily, right? So what we've had is we've had this great argument with our partner. We're saying, you are not sending an email address. And they're saying, oh, yes, we are. And you say, oh, no, you're not. And oh, yes, we are. And you go through this process. And if we look here, what we've got is the partner comes back to ADFS. ADFS then actually will then convert the token and give us back another the token that can be read by the actual relying party, and we go to the relying party. So Fiddler will allow you to get in all this. We could turn off it's easy enough to turn off the encryption on ADFS, but there is a better way of doing it these days. And the better way of doing it is to use the security logs, all right? And they have got so much better than how they were, all right? So if we enable security logging, what we can actually see is what's going on in the pipeline. So we have our claims pipeline. We then have, if we're going to our AD, we have acceptance transform rules to the AD. If we're going to another STS, we have acceptance transform rules there. And then we have the issuance authorization and the issuance transform rules to our relying party. And what I've done is I've produced this slide with actually, I used to have one of these slides for the previous version of ADFS, but this is a new one for this version of ADFS, and it shows you what's going on. So when we get something from our other STS, we get a 412 to saying this thing's been received, and then we get a series of 501s, which are all the claims the partner is actually sending us, right? So if I look at that, what I can see is there's the 412, and it says token has been received for relying party SRV1, and it was successfully authenticated. So it's come in, and look what's on there. If we look at the 501, we have http://xtseminars.com custom email alias, and there is the email. So our other party is sending us an email, but they've used a custom claim to do it. Right. So what do we do about it? Well, we either say, okay, we'll implement that custom claim as well, or we tell them to send it in the correct format. Right. And if we just pop back very quickly to if we look at the ADFS server and we go to our partner ADFS server, if we look under services on here, what we can see is the claims descriptions. And that's the one we want them to use, the standard email, but they're not. They've actually created a custom email alias, and that's what they're sending us. So what we could do is we could do exactly the same on our side. We could create this custom claim and then accept that and then translate it the way we want. Or we can tell them, actually, you know what? We don't want that. We want the correct format. Right? And those are the sort of difficulties you have when working with third parties. Okay. So back to the slides. The web application proxy, everything I've shown you in terms of federation and all the rest of it, you're using the actually using Fiddler and so on, equally well applies to the web application proxy. But I just want to talk about it in a little bit of detail here. So the WAP allows two things. You can do pass-through authentication, or you can do ADFS pre-authentication. If you do pass-through, then something is received at the WAP, it's SSL terminated at the WAP, and then it goes on to the ADFS server or something else internally. It's going on to the ADFS server, it's actually acting as a bridge, so it bridges it across. All right? If it's going on to a web application, you can either bridge it or you could go on as HTTP. And then you've got the ability to do ADFS pre-authentication. So now you come to the ADFS proxy, and at that point it says, you ain't getting through me unless you're authenticated. So it doesn't even attempt to allow it through. Right? So what it needs to do is actually go off and get a claim, right, from the ADFS server. So the ADFS server is always passed through. We can always get to it. Right? But to get through pre-authentication, we must authenticate against ADFS. And that allows us to not allow anyone onto the network unless they've been authenticated. It also allows us to do Kerberos-constrained delegation. So what we can do is we can pre-authenticate, we can get a claim set, in there will be a UPN, and we can use that UPN to actually go off and get an NT token or Windows token, Kerberos token, to go to the back-end system. Tokens, SAML tokens, have always been used traditionally in enterprise environments. In sort of different environments, it was too big, it's too heavyweight. It's XML, you know, to parse it, to create it, to validate it, to transmit it, all difficult. So there were sort of various people like Microsoft, Google, Yahoo, they came up with a simple web token. That was too simple, all right? And what's happened now is we're all sort of tend to be focusing on this JSON web token. So if you're authenticating token-based, right, and you're authenticating maybe to REST services, it will be using this JOT format. Oh, and there's a decoder there if you want to use it. Okay, so Kerberos constrained delegation, what happens is we come in to the WAP. What the WAP needs to do is we'll be authenticated, we'll get a UPN, and the WAP needs to convert the UPN to a Windows token. So the first thing is the service principal name needs to be registered on the account that is actually running the service on the back-end system, and the WAP itself will need to be set up, and again it's done in the AD, needs to be set up for constrained delegation with protocol transitioning. And what I was thinking about, you know, I had this probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago. Customer had this all beautifully working, and we'd worked with them, they got it all perfectly working, and then it broke. All right? And I thought that would make a very nice demo. So by the way, the WAP needs to be domain joined if you are using constrained delegation. So let's have a look at this in action. So I'm going to go across, and first of all, I'm going to move my client out to the internet. So we need to switch that on there. Let's go to our client machine. I'm going to actually move him onto my internet, or my pretend internet, my virtual internet. Okay, so over onto the internet. What we'll do is we'll clear that out, control X that. And then what we'll do is we will, let's actually get rid of the cookies on there. So that's done, and let's start away. So we're going across, and we're going to authenticate as John. So in here, example John, and okay, well, the first thing you notice, of course, it's using form-based authentication because I'm coming in through the web application proxy. And there are some nice claims. So for instance, there's a claim here, if you're not familiar with it. So inside corporate network is now false. It passes through the IP address. So that's my public IP address for this particular client machine on the internet. If we look here, what you see is we've gone to server one, it's bounced us up to ADFS, all right? But if we look at the header on that, we go to server one, it bounces up to ADFS. If we send that to the text wizard, let's grab that, put that in here, what we see is actually something rather different. So what it's doing, it's saying, you are not authenticated, you need to go to ADFS and authenticate to me, and me being the web application proxy. So notice the realm is the application proxy. So we've hit SRV1 and it's saying, you're not authenticated, this is using pre-authenticate, you need to go up to the web application, you need to go to the ADFS server to get a token. And then if we look further down here in Fiddler, let's just get rid of that. And so now we've gone up to ADFS and we are going to authenticate with ADFS. And in fact, let's stick on there and let's look at this in WebView. This is the home realm discovery, and we send that back. We've then got, if we look at that in web form view, we can see the home realm discovery going on. And then the next thing is the forms authentication. We send that back to ADFS. Oh, I've just given my username and password. All right, so we can see it because it was forms auth. I've authenticated with ADFS, and what's going to happen here is if we look at the header, what we're doing is getting a redirect, but inside there, we've actually got an authentication token, and if I grab that token, what I can do is, if you want to, you can actually decode that. So if I go to the Federation Lab here, and I can decode it, and it shows me that I got a token, and the audience for the token is the application proxy. So the next thing that happens is I'm going to my server again here, and what the server is saying, okay, in here we're sending the token across, and if we look at the headers down here, it swaps the token for an edge access cookie. And the server is saying, do you know what? You're not authenticated to me. So it's giving a redirect, it's a 302, and it's a redirect back to the ADFS server. So we end up at the ADFS server, and if we look at it in headers on there, we see that we're passing all the cookies through to the ADFS server, which authenticates us to the ADFS server. The ADFS server now, what it does is it gives us back our 200 OK, with our token, and we're back to SRV1. This time we get to SRV1 using the edge access cookie, and then that gives us the Fed auth cookies back, and then finally we hit SRV1 with the edge access and the Fed auth cookies. So we get through at that stage. So that sort of gives you a flavor of how we get through with pre-authentication. Now, if we go to, let's close that off, and let's actually just bring that up and close that. Okay, so what I want to do now is go to my Windows Auth, and it's signing in, so example, John. And that is giving a 500 internal error. Okay, so let's try and see what's going on here. And this is exactly the problem we had. This was all working, and then it failed. And you got a 500 internal error. If we look with the federation, we can see that we're going up to server 1. We're going, and what that's doing, it's sending us off to ADFS. We go to ADFS, and then we come back, and we go back to server 1 with the authentication cookie. And we do it once, we do it twice, we do it 3 times. So the question is, what is actually going on? And if we go across and look at the proxy, so I'm going across to my proxy, which is here, I can fire up Event Viewer. And Event Viewer will show me my if we look under here, ADFS, it shows me everything's actually working quite nicely. Federation server successfully retrieved its configuration from the Federation service. And this sort of just carries on happening. What we need to do, though, is go to the, under here, under Microsoft, we can find the web application proxy down here. And if we look here, we have got some errors. And let me see if I can take this back to here. Yeah, okay. So what's happening is the web application proxy received an HTTP request with a valid edge token. So we've arrived at the proxy with a valid edge token. The next thing that happens is it says the web application proxy successfully achieved a Kerberos ticket on behalf of the user. So what's happened is we've actually looked up the UPN and we've translated it and got a Kerberos token, and it's saying that's working. And then it says here that this is being rejected by the server, all right? So it's just the server is not accepting that Kerberos token. And we go on repeating this, and we do that 3 times. And then it says, okay, I'm going to give up. The web application proxy exceeded the maximum number of permitted Kerberos authentication attempts to the back-end server. But what it's implying is that we have a good Kerberos token, right? But the back-end server is rejecting it. And what we have to realize is that with our Kerberos token, what we're doing is we're really getting the token not to a particular server, but to a back-end SPN, all right? So wherever the SPN is registered is the only guy that can decode that token. So if it says it's getting a good token, it is. So we sort of sat and scratched our heads for a while thinking, well, actually, do you know what? The back-end service is actually being run by the computer account. So the delegation should be on the computer account. Well, the delegation is automatically on the computer account. So we thought we should check where the SPN was. So we went to the DC, and well, the question is, what is the SPN? Well, I can actually, when you configure the proxy, so let's actually just find the SPN. So we can do that. We can do a get on here. It's web application proxy application, and the name of the application, so the name in here, and the name of the application is Windows Auth, and we'll just pump that into format. Oh, I will make it easier. Format list. And that's the SPN, http://srv1.example.com. So what we need to do is just grab that, go across to our DC. So over here somewhere is our domain controller, I hope. Nope, okay. So we go across to our DC. And we need to connect the large on there. I thought it was connected, but that's okay. And I need to fire up a command prompt. And what I can do is I can use set SPN, which looks for the SPN with a dash Q on there, looks for the SPN in the active directory. And we discovered that they moved the SPN onto a service account, because the plan was on the web application proxy is to move it from, rather than using the computer account, to use a service account. But they didn't do that bit. So the SPN is actually registered on the service account. And what we needed to do is actually delete it off the service account, which we did there with a dash D. And the name of the service account was SRVC1. So that's removed it from there. And if we go back to our client, and what we should find is, so that's failed. Let's try doing it without, so we didn't need to do the log on because we were already authenticated. So that sorted the problem out. So there's a lot of things that go on in the background. And you know, if you are going to do delegation, or if you're going to use it for creating Windows clients, you do need to understand the whole delegation scenario as well. So one thing to bear in mind is if you make changes to do your testing, all right, make sure you undo those changes, especially if you put on additional logging. Bear in mind also, if you're intercepting with Fiddler, with HTTPS, you will see people's usernames and passwords. So if you're getting someone to try something out for you and log the data and sending it to you, bear in mind you need to get them to reset their password after they've done it. So do that. I've actually put a whole series of hidden slides in here. So I'll just hit the H key, I don't know why they're not showing, but there are a series of hidden slides in here which will allow you to look at some other aspects, turning on security auditing and things like that. So when you download the slide deck, you'll see that. So we've covered an awful lot in just an hour and 15 minutes. Told you, you had to hold on to your seat. I hope you're still with me. And if I can answer any questions, I'm very happy if you come down and ask questions. Otherwise, hopefully, there'll be another Tech Ed. If not, maybe we'll meet at Ignite. And all I can say is thank you very much for coming to the session. And one other point, please don't forget to fill in the evaluation. So I haven't got to that one, but I'll put the QR code up if I can get there. Oh, it's not on there. Okay. So no QR code, so please fill in the evaluations. Okay, thank you.